Well, welcome to Colt Wrangler Radio. Carson Jeffrey, how are you, man?
Pretty good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Yes, sir.
Well, we kind of hit the record. We just started talking, but tell me some more about you said you've been doing concho making, silver work and stuff.
Yeah, just all kinds of silver work, man. I've been doing silver work. I started doing leather work whenever I was in junior high, I think like seventh grade or something. And just did it for a while, and then so my family actually has a buckle company. They've had it for probably, I don't know, close to 30 years now. It's called Broken Arrow Silver Company.
Oh, really? And I feel like I've heard of that.
Yeah, they do rodeo buckles, trophy buckles for everywhere. And but they used to have the factory in Winslow, Arizona, and then they moved it to Sanderson, Texas, and then around 2000 or something, they moved it down to Guadalajara, Mexico. But whenever they closed the factory in Sanderson, they didn't take anything down to Mexico. They just kept everything they had here, and they put it in a storage unit and closed the door. And 20 years later, I went and opened that storage unit up, and I had a whole factory in there. So,
dang,
I just got after it. And but I didn't start doing the silver work till probably, oh man, I don't know, when I was probably a junior in high school or something like that. So however many years that's been, something 5, 6, 7 years, I don't know. But, yeah, just kind of been pedaling along with it. That's what I did all through college, really, was just leather and silver work, more of the silver work. And now I don't really do it anymore because I can't find I have the time. It's just I don't want to find the time to do it. And dealing with customers and everything, so.
Well, and it's one of those things when you sit down and do it, like,
you have to focus
for hours.
Oh, yeah. And it's just like with anything. Whenever you're in a rhythm and you're doing it every day, like, it's so easy. But then if you take, you know, 2 months off and you go in there and do one cuff, you're like, man, it takes a few pieces or a few days to get back into a rhythm. And if you're only doing it once or twice a week or once or twice a month, it's hard to find that rhythm to get into it, you know?
Yeah. Well, now it seems like you're playing a lot of shows, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what shut everything down for me. Once we started playing a lot of shows, it just kind of got put to the back burner, and we were just on the road a lot. And during the week, I didn't feel like going in there and dealing with customers, and so I just pretty much quit doing it, and I just built some stuff for myself. Whenever I needed a new belt, I'd make myself a belt, but
yeah,
that's about it.
Yeah,
I'd like to bring some stuff back for the merch table, honestly, like some,
man, that would be cool,
some belts and some little cuffs, maybe some pendants and stuff.
And you made it, so like that's even more,
yeah,
that's a little more value to it.
Yeah, and we did that a couple of times. I made some turquoise rings and took them to the merch table, and I mean, we sold that night all of them. So
really,
But
then you got to sit down for however long and make it all.
Well, the rings aren't too hard. I mean, they're pretty simple. They're just a bezel cup and a band, and you're pretty much done. But yeah, I need to take more time to do that because I feel like that's also more of a connection to your audience and your fans when they can have a piece that you made yourself, and then they can show their people, look, this singer Carson Jeffrey made it, you know.
That's cool. I didn't even know you did that.
Yeah, I don't really post it a whole lot on the socials anymore because I just don't want the constant DMs on my Instagram, you know, can you think you could take custom order, can you do that? And I just don't want to do custom orders right now. And anytime I do post something, then the DMs just flood, and it's just a lot in there. I hate DMs.
Yeah.
I have literally hundreds and hundreds of DMs just unopened because I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not much of a social media guy anyway, so.
I hear you.
I have to be, unfortunately. I wish it wasn't so, we didn't rely on social media so much, you know.
At what point do you think you'll have somebody else take that over for you?
Somebody already does my Facebook.
Okay.
Because I hate Facebook. But my Instagram, I still do that. I don't ever see myself giving up my Instagram, at least. That one's pretty easy. But maybe somebody checking my DMs.
Right. Yeah, going through. Hey, yeah. This message might actually be worth something.
Yeah, exactly. I know. There have been some times where I've got a DM. Or I'll check them every now and then and just look to see what's there. And it'll be like a month old, and it was somebody kind of important. And I was like, oh, man, I'm. Might should have been looking at that.
Yeah, right. Offering you a really good show. Or
right,
something.
Yeah. Or just, you know, people, like, when people mention you in their story, you know, and it's somebody that has 200,000 followers or something, you're like, man, I should have given them a little more attention, you know?
Yeah. So. No, I get that. I check every. I'm one of those people that check everything. But I've learned to where I'll always want to, like, respond to people in one way or the other, just acknowledge that they sent me a message.
Right.
Whether that be, you know, doing little like on their message or whatever. Yeah. But I've kind of gotten in the habit to where if they're not really saying anything and they're just viewing your stuff, I'll just kind of like not open it and delete it.
Mm-hmm.
But because I don't want the notification on there.
Right.
Because what I've noticed is, and not to be discouraging of anybody that wants to say hi, but like...
They reach out to you.
Yeah, it's what'll happen is usually those people will constantly do that.
Right.
So you'll get like, they'll react to like every single thing you post.
Yeah.
And so then it's like you're getting notifications all the time.
It is, you're talking about, it's funny you were talking about the little number that you'll get. You want to clear the number. Mine is like 150 or something.
That means you're cool.
It's too many. I don't even look at it. So, and I used to look at the DMs. I did whenever it wasn't very many, but then whenever it just floods in, it just kind of is like anxiety almost. You're like, I don't want to open that tab at all.
I'm just trying to find my balance of what to pay attention to and what to not.
Yeah.
So when did you start playing music?
Man, I've always played just almost as long as I can remember. My uncle got me on the drums. He was a drummer, and he's still a sound man today. But he played for a lot of the bigger, you know, cover bands and stuff. And but he got me on the drums whenever I was probably, 7 years old or something. And played the drums for up until junior high, and then junior high I started playing guitar. And I didn't start singing until high school, but played the guitar since junior high. And, just kind of stumbled into it, really. It was never really something I really put a whole lot of effort into. And then I just really got into the Texas scene and Texas singers and stuff. And high school started trying to write some songs, and here we are.
So were you always playing what you're playing now, or did you start out? Me, I always wanted to be in a pop punk band, like, forever.
Right. No, man, actually, my uncle, whenever I was real little, probably that 7-8 year old, maybe 10 or something, I don't know, he gave me every single Cross Canadian Ragweed CD that they had made up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all of those CDs. I had all of the ZZ Top CDs. And then that's pretty much all I had for as far as CDs, maybe some Tim McGraw and Kenny Chesney.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we got a brand new truck, and it was one of the trucks where it had the radio in the back, like you could plug your headphones in the back seat.
Yeah.
And with my parents' business, we would go like to town like 2-3 times a day. So whenever I was a little kid, I'd be in the back seat and I'd plug my headphones in, and you could upload up like 6 CDs at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would put all of those Cross Canadian Ragweed records in, and I'd listen to those just on repeat on the way to town back every single day. And that's, that was probably like the first musician that, or the band that I really attracted to was them. And I had the ZZ Top CDs also. So, but it was a lot of, I guess it was Texas country from the beginning, really, or whatever you want to call them, you know?
Yeah.
And
that's interesting too, is because it all did start as like Texas country, but a lot of these guys aren't really country. It's like Texas rock scene.
I don't even know what you call anything anymore. I don't think it really matters.
And people get offended when you say Texas country.
Yeah, now. I know. That's why I said whatever you want to call them, because I don't know. I mean, I don't care what you call me. I don't even call myself any. I guess I say I'm Texas country, whatever. But I don't think. There's not even genres anymore, in my opinion. There's so much stuff out there, and everybody's playing with everybody. I mean, you know, we're out there opening for Geo quite a bit, and then Cody West, and then we go open for Kevin Fowler and Cody Canada the other day. And I mean, it's just like this big mashup thing, you know. So
when did you start seeing it get traction? Because I mean, those are some big names, you know, here in Texas.
Yeah, I've just been very blessed and lucky, be honest with you. I don't really have any secrets. People are always asking me, what did you do, But just it just kind of started happening from the beginning, really. I mean, I put out that that album that had Ranch Girl Dream on it my senior year of college, and just put it out for friends, basically, and then all of a sudden, it just started getting a little bit, and people really liked Ranch Girl Dream, and... I had Alex Torres was a manager. He called me 2 months after I put out the album, and he was already offering to help me and help me for a little while. And yeah, it just seemed like it happened really quick. We were getting some shows booked in, really good shows. We opened for Roger Krieger like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, like right after I put out that album. And
how long ago was that album released?
2019, the fall of 2019.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, it all happened really quick. And
Did you put it out, and did you have a band at that point? Or
I did not. I had no band when I put that thing out.
See, that's a hard leap, because then, all right, you put the thing out.
Yeah. Yeah,
it gains traction, and now all of a sudden you're getting offers. And
it was pretty stupid, really. It was, but we made it work. You know, I went in and had just studio guys play on it and the album in Austin down there at 512 Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Omar Vallejo, he produced it, and he did everything on it. But yeah, I had no band and kind of had to put some guys together real quick. I mean, my original bass player, Paul Perez, he had been, you know, in bands his whole life. And he really helped me piece together the first band that we had, or the original guys that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, everybody's just kind of branched out, and we've got new people come in now. But yeah, he kind of helped me get the first guys together right after. We had an album release party when the album came out, and we kind of put some guys together for that. And we played a few shows with that group of guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then got my guitar player not long after, and a new drummer, and then piecing together some more guitar players, another bass player. And yeah, it's just been the band part. That was, yeah, that was interesting in the beginning. Well, I didn't have a clue what I was doing, like, at all.
Yeah.
I was so green, man. I had no idea. I'd half of those songs, I'm like, man, I shouldn't have put that out.
Mm. Well, that's, you know, that's part of it.
Yeah, it is.
It's
it
hard to orchestrate all that.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's schedule and everybody's life. And
yeah, finding a good band is really difficult. And I got a great group of guys that, you know, thankfully are in it 100%, because it's hard out here, you know, being on the road and there's little money and it's rough. You gotta want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You dang sure have to want it. So
how often are you playing now?
It's kind of slowed down a little bit. Just lately, just with the wedding last month and everything, and some stuff before that, just block dates and stuff. But now it's getting amped back up, and yeah, we're 2-3 shows a weekend. So
nice.
Yep.
Do you ever do any like longer like tours or anything like that?
I mean, that's the goal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To do some stuff like that, if it made sense. You mm-hmm. know, I don't want to be out there playing for $250 a night for 15 days in a row or
right.
something. But
yeah.
Not when you know, my overhead is too high for that. But yeah, no, I'd love to do some bigger tours like that and go out. That's the goal, is to see how big we can take it, you know.
Mm-hmm. You have good like transportation and all that?
Yep, we've got a nice transit van, the Dually taller.
Oh, yeah.
Ford Transit, whatever.
I've driven one of those quite a bit. They're cool.
Yeah, it gets us down the road, man. We haven't had any problems with it other than the AC went out last summer, but I mean, we pushed that AC hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the summertime, we got that sucker cranked. That's our green room at a lot of places. Yeah. You know, we'll just be sitting out there in that and have that AC rolling. And yeah, it didn't last summer.
Is it a diesel?
No, it's the biggest gas motor they got in them. Mm-hmm. But
what kind of fuel mileage does that get?
8 miles with a trailer. It's bad.
That diesel one that I've driven quite a bit, Transit, Dually, high top, you know, you can stand up mm-hmm. in it.
Oh, yeah.
It would get like, of course, not pulling anything.
Yeah.
But I was getting like 16 to 17.
Yeah, it won't get quite that without the trailer, but it does get closer to that.
Mm.
Yeah, like Cody West and them, they've got the diesel.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they like it, but like I was talking to Jake Murphy whenever we got ours, and I was like, man, what do you think about just that higher – or the bigger gas one? He's like, man, honestly, I think the only difference you're gonna see is just you got to pay when the diesel breaks. You got to spend a little more money to get it fixed, and mm-hmm. you're just spending more money down the road. So we ended up getting the gas, and man, it hadn't given us any problems.
There you go. Yeah, those things are nice though. They're surprisingly, like, you think it's gonna be like driving a bus, and you get in it and you can whip that thing around.
That sucker's got some power. It yeah. You don't even feel the trailer, I mean, at all.
Really?
Especially with that high top, I think it breaks a lot of that wind
mm-hmm.
over that trailer. Like, when I pull that trailer just with my truck, just around town or something, man, it bogs my truck down just because it catches so much wind, you know?
Yeah.
But shoot, that Transit, you can just roll down the interstate with it.
So you're set up, man. You got a band. You got yeah. a good van. You got your trailer.
Yeah. Yeah, the trailer falling apart, but we're making it.
making it work, man. They yeah. get tore up so easy. Oh, they're so cheaply made.
The cargo trailers are not meant for what we put them through at all. They're meant for going to a job site and sitting, not going down the highway to Indiana and back.
Right, loading crap in there.
Overweight, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad overloads his all the time because he does live sound.
Oh, okay.
So he's always pumping his full of speakers equipment.
Yep.
And he's always, he breaks leaf springs all the time.
Yeah, we've broken one of them, I guess, and then it broke some other stuff, so we ended up just replacing everything under there. And I'm about to, when we find some time to do it, we're going to kind of rebuild the whole bottom of the trailer. Let's just make it a little more heavier duty and kind of build a frame under it. Because right now it's just like leaf springs and axles, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
We want to put some bigger axles and a bigger frame to where it can take a little bit more of that hit going down the road because, man, it gets drug around.
And it's a lot of weight, like you don't realize.
It is a lot of weight, yeah. Especially with our big old Milwaukee toolbox on wheels that we have as one of our like tech vaults. We use one of them, and that sucker's so heavy. We need to get it out of there. It's actually my guitar player's. He got it for us like probably going on 2 years ago, and we've had it in there that long. And I keep telling him, like, man, I'm gonna get a real vault that's the lighter. I keep telling him. But
is it full of stuff? Like you got?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's the one that's got like, you know, I guess it's probably got like 8 drawers, and we've got it just full of, you know, strings. Just all cables, just anything you think of in there. But it's heavy, very heavy.
Yeah.
It does not need to be in there. The floor is like rotten. It's like falling through where it's been sitting.
That sucker just might pop out.
It might just go down. It might fall through and go down the highway. You know, we had to move it over its spot so that it could start wearing a new spot. But
dang.
Yeah, yeah. Don't follow that. Don't do that if you're out there listening.
Those road cases are expensive, though.
They are. Yeah, that's kind of why I keep pushing it off, especially like since, you know, recently the shows were a little bit slower and stuff, and just didn't really have the money to go spend $1,500 on a big tech vault, you know, because we bought the our in-ear rack case, and, I mean, that's like almost $1,000 and stuff, so the price of one of them other ones with drawers and everything, it starts adding up.
Yeah. So you're running in-ears and the whole deal, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. We actually just got a new in-ear system last week or 2 weeks. Yeah. I guess last weekend. We had one, but it was a little older. And this one's way nicer.
Do you have a guy to run it or?
Not at the moment. If you're a sound guy out there looking for a job, hit me up.
All right. You heard it.
We need somebody to run all our sound, our in-ears especially. It's hard to find somebody, you know, that wants to go out there and do what we're doing. Because, like I said, it's not fun or easy. It is fun, don't get me wrong, but it's a lot of work. You know, you really got to want to be in a van with 7 guys going to wherever and back, you know.
Yeah, not making any money.
Not making any money and sweating with the van that the AC doesn't keep up in the 100-degree weather, so.
Yeah.
It's a blast, but hit me up.
There you go. I mean, that's why I never really ran the in-ears, is because if you don't have the right person mixing for you, like.
Yeah, luckily we all in the band know how to, like, run my board. We've got the M32 or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And so, I mean, just adjusting, like, during sound check, once you got it set, it's pretty much set, but. Just for like EQing, or mainly we just want somebody for problem solving, you know, like I think you're only as good as how well you can fix your problems on stage. And when something goes wrong, you got to have somebody that knows how to fix it, whether it's a cable that goes out in the middle of the show or a sound check, or you've got a buzz in your ears. There's just so many things that are above my knowledge that I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's somebody else would.
What's like one of the worst things that's happened on stage as far as like a gear failure?
We've been pretty lucky, nothing like during the show really yet, knock on some wood, but like just before the show, just like in-ear problems with the buzzing, channels going bad or something, and trying to figure out what's going on with the channel. And sometimes I've had it happen twice, I guess, on stage. It's like my acoustic will go out, something with a cable or something with the board, maybe, or not the board, but like my pedal board, maybe one of the daisy chains, just completely stop working a couple of times, and it kind of throws me off. I start forgetting words. And
yeah.
Because you're thinking. You're like, you're trying to talk in the talk back mic to your guy. Luckily, we had somebody side stage those two times. And I was like, hey, guitar ain't working. And so then I'm up front trying to sing and just thinking about that. And I'm forgetting words up there and everything. Right. And just wasn't working.
Yeah. No, it's not easy to do that.
No. Yeah. It's like, give me a new guitar. Let's try that. Still wasn't working. And so then he's plugging, and finally it just started working again. But I don't know.
Yeah. At that point, do you just, like, sit back, like, finish the song, and then try to diagnose the problem?
We try to keep rolling.
Yeah.
If something's wrong, we keep going, whether it's a drum kit falling off the entire riser or whatever. But
so has that happened to you?
Yeah. So at Terrell at the Silver Saloon about a month ago, or I guess a little longer, Chase was up there playing, and we left his rug at the venue the night before.
Mm, I've done that.
So we found a bar mat, like the bar floor mat, you know, that they'll stand on to serve drinks, I guess. Mm-hmm. Found one in the trash can behind the venue. We're like, oh, that'll work.
And for people that don't know,
yeah,
the reason you have rugs is because most of the stages are just a hard surface or concrete or whatever, and your kit will just slide all over the place.
It'll walk a mile.
Yeah, it'll walk a mile.
Literally.
Yeah.
You could play it and just go down the highway, you know? But, so he threw that mat up there, and we were a little weary. We were like, man, I hope this works. And it did not. We get not even all the way through the first song, and the kick drum mic stand in front of the kick, you know, is about to fall off.
Yeah.
And I turn around and see it, and I'm like stuffing it back while in the middle of the song. And then he's on the talk.
At least
back.
He noticed that. My bandmates don't seem to notice those things.
Right.
I was like, if I could just get one guy to just sit right there and put his foot till we finish this fucking song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's in the talk back and he's like, hey, my kit is falling off the deal. Y'all have got to come tape it down. So our tour manager at the time was running over there, and he's like taping the entire rug to the stage and off, because he's like rolled it down too.
Mm-hmm.
He's taping it and it's not working. So in between songs, he got another guy up there, and they actually like drug it back a little bit. I don't know how they managed it, but they drug it back up there a little bit and then taped it down with a lot of tape. He was like on stage for a whole two songs just fixing it.
It's just so,
and we're still playing, just going
playing.
At it.
Well, you kept the,
but you have rolling. To, you know, you can't stop. You got to keep going.
Yeah.
Especially when, like, you're the opener, you know.
Right.
You got to get your stuff on and get it off and just do your job. So
it just really sucks when those things happen, because they throw you off and
you
don't play as
and
good.
And then you're
as
thinking
you
about it, or you don't have maybe as much energy as you should have, because you're thinking about this thing going on behind you. But you got to put a smile on and sing. So
I had that happen the other day, and there was already, like, it was this fold-out, like, outdoor stage. It was nice. And they had all these rugs, like, already laid out.
Right.
So I was like, I'm not going to put a rug on top of a rug. I'll just roll with it. But all rugs are not created equal.
No.
And what I found out was is that I have a cheaper rug. And so it's got thicker, like, loops, right? Well, this rug that was up there was nice. It was very fine.
Yeah.
Well, it ended up just being kind of slick. So I start playing, and my kick drum starts walking.
Oh man.
And I'm like, crap, like, it's already set up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, bad, to where anytime I got a little break in the song, I would grab it and pull it back. And then you know, tried a couple little quick solutions, and then after like the second or third song, and it was throwing me off bad.
Yeah,
like, I was playing okay, but I could have, it was one of those days where I could have had a really great show, like, everything felt good except for that.
Yep.
And I finally, it was kind of outside, and I remember when we were loading in that there was this big oak tree that they had just cut down in this creek that was like right behind the stage. So I just walked off the stage and I went and got a big ass log and I threw it right in front of my kick drum.
In front of the kick.
And it fixed it, and we just kept rolling. And it was then I could have fun, you know. I was grabbing my kick drum every 2 seconds.
Right. Yep.
I've definitely had a lot of. I've had stuff fall over.
Oh, yeah. Last night, the opener finished, and I mean 10 seconds after the opener was done, the wind picked up and, like, had this just huge gust come through for, like, 2 minutes, and it blew all of our, like, our deads, our case, our lids or whatever, blew them all over, and Chase's drums started just, like, toppling, and they're grabbing them and stuff. And then while we're playing, one of his cymbals is just – it fell over into the tom. It's just sitting there. And he had to, like, in the middle, he's like grabbing it, pushing it back. The wind was howling. Yeah.
Oh, that's rough, man. Yep. Yeah. I've had, yeah, a lot of it too has been, you know, the fault of me or bandmates too. Like, because I used to play in a little bit heavier of a band, and they used to jump up on my kick drum and stuff. And I had my guitar player one time, and he jumped up there and he slipped and he fell on top of me.
Oh, man.
During the middle of the set.
Yeah.
And I think at the same time, like, and then I think he got up and, like, got all twisted up, and then I think he ended up knocking his microphone over. Like, it was wild. But I love it when stuff like that happens, because it's really, you know, like, all the times that things went right, all those shows, like, right. I don't remember those shows.
Right.
You know, I remember those times when shit got wild. And,
yeah. If you're, I mean, I think that just makes you, how well you can push through the problems, that's how good you are, I think. That's, like, that's what I keep saying. I was like, if we can get somebody for problem solving, you know, when you're on stage where you can eliminate those things, man, it'd be so much better. But,
oh, yeah, and it happens. I mean, and a lot of it, though, it's good when you don't have that to rely on starting out, because it makes you think
makes
ahead.
Makes you better, yeah.
Do I have strings? Do I have this? Do I have that? Yep. Do I have my guitar on the side, like, tuned up?
Right.
Like, for me, I used to, all right, do I have an extra snare drum? Because I used to break heads and stuff.
Right.
Do I have an extra cymbal sitting there?
Yep.
Do I, you know, got my sticks laid out?
Yeah.
And, like... Yep. You have to have all this backup stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and just so the show would go good.
Yep.
And it just makes you, you know, more conscious and just more responsible for your craft, you know.
Yep.
And I've, you know, played with people that don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been without a TM for, I guess, about a month now. And it's been a very much a learning curve, because, I mean, I pretty much had one for 2 years straight now, just kind of helping. And whenever you're before the show, like, there's just things that we haven't been thinking about, because somebody's been there doing it for us, you know, just even as simple as getting your in-ear pack out and getting the batteries in and getting ready. Like, just like, it was like 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, I guess I better go get my in-ear pack here. We're about to go on stage. I better have that on.
Yeah. Right.
And you got to go get it, or just, you know, simple little things that you don't think about, but then all of a sudden now you have to think about them and you're like, man, I kind of take it for granted, you know?
And they make a big deal. You know, if those things are wrong,
yeah,
you can really throw off a show. You know, you get up there and your pack dies out.
Yeah,
your
pack dies. If our pack were to die and nobody knows how to fix that, or not die, but maybe it cuts out and needs to be resynced, and nobody knows how to do that, well, I guess I'm gonna have to run off stage and go resync my pack, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
That doesn't look good to as the showmanship. You know.
Yeah, and so. It doesn't look good, and it makes you
makes me look unprofessional.
Have a worse time,
you know?
Too. You know, you don't play as good. You don't sing. You won't sing as good.
Yep.
You know, when your mind's all over the place.
Yep. And we're all about trying to look as good as we can, not just to the fans, but to whoever we're playing with. You know, when we're opening up for who, I don't care who it is, anybody, I want them to look at us and say, man, they really had their stuff together that day. You know, and we try to get our stuff torn down when we're opening for somebody. We kind of take pride in how fast we can tear down and get out of their
definitely.
Way.
Definitely, yeah. And there's nothing more annoying than,
when somebody's just dragging
headliner.
Their feet
yeah.
or they've moved your drums all around, and then you're out there when you ask them not to or something. Or it's just have common courtesy, you know, and be quick. You know, it's not your show. Get off the stage.
Right, yeah.
We try to do that. We get our stuff off of there and let them get on. So,
how many people are in your band?
We are five-piece.
Five-piece.
Yes, sir, right now. And then we've got a new tour manager. So there's six of us out there right now. So it used to be seven whenever we were tour manager and a merch guy. Mm-hmm. So it was a little crowded.
Is five-piece, is that right where you want it? Or is there something?
For right now, we're fine, because it's just another person to pay if I were to get somebody else. But we would love to have a steel player in there eventually.
Those are hard to come by.
Yeah, and we'd love to have somebody.
They're not like 80 years old.
Right. We'd like somebody that can kind of do it all. I know that's a lot to ask.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, steel and maybe keys or something, or even fiddle, if they could just do it all, you know.
There's a few people out there, but they're high in demand.
You play the banjo, you know, the fiddle and the steel and maybe the spoons while you're up there.
Right. Yeah, but then everybody wants those guys.
Right. They do.
You know, if they have their shit together.
Yeah.
Because there are people that are super talented.
Yeah.
Like that. But they're hard to work with.
Yeah.
Or their life's a mess or whatever.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They don't show up on time.
Yeah.
And it's like, so finding that guy that
is
on time, is talented, is, you know, has his life together
yeah.
to where it's not affecting the band and his job.
Yep.
That's in high demand. You know, he can go pretty much play for anybody at that point.
Yeah, you've got to have guys that are just on top of their stuff, you know, and not just messing around, because it sure makes life a whole lot easier when everybody's out there trying and showing up and putting in the time that you're putting in, you know.
And how long did it take you to – I know we talked about it a little bit, but how long did it take you to get to that point where you felt like your band is dialed in, like, all right, I got the guys I need? From when you first started, not having a band, to where you're at now?
Man, I don't think any of us are where we want to be yet, but I feel like we're pretty dang good right now together as a band, this band that we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, every day you want to be as best as you can be, and I don't think any of us are satisfied with where we're at. You know, you want to be better every day, so I don't think we'll ever be satisfied, but I'm very happy with what we have right now. Mm-hmm. But we keep pushing ourselves daily. You know, we got new music coming out, and we're trying to put the best effort for those songs in, because there's a lot going into these songs. There's a lot more production in these songs, so we're kind of pushing ourselves
mm-hmm.
more now to try and make the live show better or sound more like the production that's on the tracks, you know?
Right, which is difficult.
I feel like we're in a big changing time in my band and my music and everything, just trying to shape it up, you know, and make it be the best that we can have it, you know. Every single day we're out there trying to be the best that we can be and do something new, you know.
When are your releases coming out?
So we got a single coming out this coming Friday, August 5th. It's called Cow Pissing. So, but yeah, and then we're going to have a couple more singles coming out. Probably, I don't know. It'll be after that, but then we have a full album coming out after the three singles release.
Will that be your second full album?
That'll be my third full album.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's 10 songs, including the singles. But yeah, man, this is the most proud I've ever been of a set of songs. I feel like I finally found myself, not in just the songwriting, but the sound and everything. Just the whole thing as a whole, the whole theme of it. And just, I feel like I finally put something together instead of just releasing songs. You know, I feel like I finally went in there and made a project and released it, you know. So, and I hope everybody else thinks the same. Maybe they think it's crap, but I sure like it.
Well, that's good. As long as you like it. That's really all that matters. But so the process of writing these new songs, mm-hmm. do you come in with a song already, bit of an idea, bring it to your band, or do you guys all sit in the same room, figure it out? How's it go?
Yeah, so I write all the songs pretty much. I had a couple co-writes on there. One of them with Buddy, the original bass player, Paul Perez, and then Chase Chancellor, my drummer, he wrote a verse on one of the songs. That's going to be one of the singles coming up. But, yeah, man, I pretty much write all of them, and it's just me and the acoustic. And, you know, this time around, in the past, we hadn't really done any kind of preparation or anything, and I've used a mixture of my band and other guys and everything. And but this time, we still didn't have a lot of preparation time, but we went in, like, I guess 2 days before we went up to Nashville, and we kind of just went through everything. We had already been playing a couple of them that we'd really written pretty good, or they were solid ideas. And the other ones, we just got in there one afternoon in the Cat Spring Hall there. I rented it out and all got in the middle of the floor, and we just got after it and really got after these songs and trying to figure out what exactly was going on, and really just from my mind, so I knew what I was thinking going in there to tell the producer sound wise and stuff. And we played a show in Fredericksburg, Texas, and on Saturday, it was Easter, yeah, and Sunday of Easter we drove all the way to Nashville from Fredericksburg and spent the whole week up there and got them cut. So
nice.
Yeah, and it was a mixture of my guys playing, and then we brought in some just crazy good musicians. Josh Turner's guitar player, Alan Jackson's steel player.
I bet those guys just make it look so easy. Like, man, they go and just knock it out.
A couple takes. Like, you sit in there. Like, I sent them demos, acoustic demos, to the producer, like, you know, a week before. And then when we get in there, we just go in the control room, and everybody's in there, and they play them on the computer through the speakers. And they're, you know, they're charting them and everything, and we're listening. And that those guys don't even listen to the songs. They're sitting there talking, having coffee, chit-chatting about the ball game yesterday. And the song's over, and everybody's like, oh, y'all ready? And they're like, yep, yep, let's go. I mean, they don't even listen to it, and they're just nailed it.
That's wild.
I mean, it's like, I don't know. That's what they do. They right. do that for a yeah. living, and they're damn good at it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, like on the last stuff, we had Kenny Chesney's guitar player, and Kenny Chesney, whenever I was little, he was king to me. Mm-hmm. And so that was pretty wild. But, yeah, those guys are so good in Nashville. You know, it's obviously, you know, people like to talk bad about Nashville with the, you know, the country music that's coming out. It's not all the country music that's coming out of there, but a lot of the stuff that's – they kind of have this – I don't know. There's like this idea that Nashville's bad, and I understand mm-hmm. where that is, you know, because I don't agree with – or I don't necessarily care for all the music that comes out of there.
Yeah.
But you cannot deny the level of musicians that are out there.
Oh, the professionalism.
And the professionalism yeah. and the quality. I mean
– I had the experience the other day. I helped my dad do a show. It was like this fundraiser in Bernie.
Yeah.
And they brought in this younger – Nashville guy. I guess he had a song that went real big on TikTok or something
like
that.
Yeah, there's a lot of those TikTokers now.
And, you know, the, you know, tall, handsome guy, smooth talker, you know, yep. like the total, like, Nashville type and yep. Skinny jeans, ball cap.
Yeah.
And I wanted to hate those guys so bad, you know, yep. like, to be honest.
Yeah.
They were so nice. They were so professional. They flew in, so they were backlining, like,
yeah, they
rented the backline company kind of
rented all
like
the instruments. Yeah,
a shoddy drum kit and yep. stuff, and did my best to make it sound good. And those guys were just like, "Oh yeah, no problem." They rolled in. They right. were the easiest band. They were quick. They sounded amazing. They went and shook all our hands afterwards, and yep. I was like, "Man, those guys were really cool."
Yep.
You know what I mean? There was like no percentage of douchiness about them.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be all douche, you know, right. and it really impressed me,
yeah.
you know, and,
oh, yeah.
and they were just really on point. Yeah. And, you know, am I going to go stream his music later on the way home? No,
probably not. Yeah.
But man, they did their job damn good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the recording studios in Nashville might get a bad rap just because they're only doing what you bring to them, you know? If you bring that type of song to them, then, yeah, they're going to record it. But, like, I brought my style to them, and we did my style. You know, they really nailed exactly what I want. And the studio that I went to, Farmland Studios, David Dorn's the producer there. I mean, great guy, a great crew there. They put out some killer music, and they do a lot more, like, Texas stuff constantly. And they're not really doing any of that, you know, pop country or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they found my sound. I told him what I wanted, and they really honed in and found it for me. You know, I think it's cohesive and sounds exactly what I've been trying to find for 4 years. So,
mm-hmm. Do you think there's going to be like any variety, more variety in country music, in at that level, like CMT type stuff, in the future? I feel like maybe like Sturgill Simpson and like
yeah.
like Tyler Childers and guys like that changed the game a little bit yeah. to where like now I go. And, like, my friends that are, like, in the punk rock scene are, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
deep into, you know, urban artisty type areas, they're jamming bands like that. They right. never, ever listen to country. And right. they're, like, listen to Tyler Childers or listen yeah. to Sturgill Simpson. So I'm like, oh, this is starting to hit a really broad spectrum of people. This right. isn't just country people listening to this. This is, like, yeah. everybody's listening to
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's going to start changing the game, if that's going to be kind of the new standard of country versus like
yeah,
Miranda Lambert or something like that.
Right. Well, I mean, my personal opinion is I think that not just Texas country or whatever you want to call it, but artists like that that are more unique and not so mainstream, I think there's going to be a huge market for them coming up very soon. I think that just – the world is waking up to what's going on with the not mainstream, you know. Just look at Parker McCollum and Sturgill and Tyler, you know. They're very grassroots, or they did it themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. They didn't have all the help in the beginning. And it's just because of like good music, you know. And I think the good
and the
music,
internet, it's accessible.
And the internet, it is.
It's not just I can only see what's on CMT,
exactly, yeah,
or what's on the radio station. Now I can go dig or put on an algorithm. Will figure it out. Yeah. And start throwing me stuff.
I think you're gonna see a lot more, just good music people make it to the top and be in there and be exposed to the whole country, as opposed to maybe their little niche. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. I really do, yeah. Because I think that people just want to hear it and they're interested in it. And not only are the fans interested in it, but the rest of the world or the rest of the industry, as far as, you know, record labels and big time industry people that are maybe just in Nashville and LA, they're like, man, what's going on over there? All of a sudden they're making all this money.
Yeah.
They're not paying anybody to do it.
Yeah.
We need to go see what's going on.
It's so watered down and dumbed down too. That's what's such a big turnoff.
Yeah.
It's like how many songs do I have to listen to where it talks about dirt road and truck and partying Saturday and going to church on Sunday? It's like, geez, it's like, can I like literally tell me anything else?
Right.
You know, and it I don't know, it's so bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad. And I don't know where I was, but like I was somewhere and they had CMT on television. I don't know if it was a restaurant or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their like campfire sessions, right?
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of that stuff that's been coming out. It's like tailgate sessions or this or that. And it's like these artists and they're filming them and it's really done well. And they have their, you know, it's all acoustic. And there's a lot of that stuff out there with a lot of good music. So CMT is like doing their version of it.
Right.
The fire pit, no shit, is like 10 feet in diameter. Yeah. It's like the hugest thing you've ever seen. Right. It's gas lit.
Yeah.
So it's like fake. It's a fake fire.
Right.
and then it's like Miranda Lambert and her like hat. And it's like so bent out of shape. It looks terrible. And then like there's this other guy who I don't know who it is. Like all black, skinny jeaned out with his hat. And he's got in-ears in.
Right.
So you're doing a campfire session with a fake fire and in-ears
on the click track.
And like a hat that was wonky on the shelf and they just stuck it on her head and no one was like, hey, this looks terrible. Like, and that's like the standard, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's supposed to be the pinnacle of country music. And I'm just like, wow, this is bad. And it's not to take away from the talent. Those people are very talented people.
Yeah.
They're professionals, they're good at what they do. They're amazing singers, they're amazing musicians.
Yeah.
But it's just bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. It just bugs me. And it, for me personally, coming from, you know, the hill country and everything, it's like, wait, those are the people who are representing us on a worldwide scale. And I feel totally misrepresented and it pisses me off.
Right.
How you feel about that?
Yeah,
that's my rant.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say I think Miranda Lambert's great. No, I do. But I didn't get to see your hat there, so I can't say for
it's
that.
It's good. It was just the whole – the visuals of it made you want to throw up.
Right. No, yeah.
And then the content of the music, too, is not – it's like this isn't you. This is what executives have told you to be
– right.
To sell a certain amount, to make these numbers or whatever. It's like, give me some real shit.
Yeah. Man, I do agree with you that I don't really like to listen to the music. I don't. The stuff like that style, that's, you know, bro country, pop country, whatever you want to call it. I don't like listening to it. But I do have to respect them in a sense of, you know, they are doing things to be successful in that market, in that genre.
Yeah.
And they're putting the right steps and doing it that way. That's not the way that I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they are building their brand that way. And they're making a career at it. So I have to make it in a respect sense that way. But yeah, I just don't agree.
But you're kind of piggybacking off a culture that you do not exist in.
Yeah.
Which is what bothers me. It's like, it's like the same in the hip hop when these guys are like rolling around with their wads of cash and talking about how gangster they are.
Right.
And then as soon as they get in a situation, like, oh, 6ix9ine boy, you know, sells out all his guys. It's like, oh, so you were a gangster yesterday and today you're not.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's not a lot of respect for them.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like they're just piggybacking off some sort of culture so that they can get famous, so they can have some money.
Yeah.
And that bothers me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not saying that they're necessarily doing that, but I feel like there is an element to that.
You're right. I think the fakeness, it's not good. you know.
And here's what I've noticed on the other side of that coin is guys like you, you know, like you rodeo and you rope and you do stuff like that. And I think that's one thing that like George Strait was really smart about too.
Right.
It's like he got so big, but then at the same time, he still stayed a part of the culture, fed back into it, and gained, you know, and still holds all the respect of all those people. Like Chris LeDoux, same way.
Well, I think that was a pretty big part of my success early on, or whatever you want to call it, success. But the Western industry from day one, I really feel like that's a large fan base that a lot of people don't tap into till maybe further on in their career. But I tapped into it from day one. And it's a huge industry. And that's a lot of people, and they've helped me out tremendously by streaming my music, coming to shows, and kind of gave me that boost in the beginning. That's extra people that nobody else had. And it helped me from day one, right out of the gate.
And you're representing them. That's kind of what I'm getting at. You know what I mean? It's like...
I'm trying to... That's kind of how I market myself, is just trying to be just a normal guy, a normal cowboy, rodeo cowboy that happens to sing. Like, singing is not my life, you know? Roping is not my life either, but I'm just I'm a normal guy that loves to rope and loves to sing, you know, and that's kind of how I try to represent myself.
Hey, you're just doing what you like.
Just doing what I like, man, and rodeo is all I've ever known, literally forever. That's all we ever did. Music was never the plan. I'd get home from school, I'd get me a bag of chips, and then we'd go to the barn and saddle up, and we'd rope till 10 o'clock that night, every night, you know? And then, you know, the high school rodeos, CPRAs all through college rodeos, and then all of a sudden just completely dropping it and doing this now. I'm just really trying to hang on to it and make that more my brand rather than this whole music thing, because I feel like that is the brand. That's who I am. You know?
It is.
That's all I've ever known, so why would I try to change something like that? And I still rope. You still get to rope during the week and interrupt when I can, but so I am still – I'm not out here faking it or nothing. Like, I'm actually still involved in it, but yeah, I just happen to sing, you know.
Yeah, and it's good, and it's good to get a little bit of the variety too, man. I think people get so into the musicianship part that they end up not living their actual life anymore.
Yeah,
and it affects their music or what they can sing about.
Yeah, well, just like you were talking about, you want to go on any tours. Yeah, I want to go on tours, but I am not the kind of guy that will be gone for 3 or 4 months at a time. I don't think I could do it, just because I'm a big family person, and I like to live life, you know. If it came to the point where we were on a tour bus for 3 or 4 months straight, oh my, I couldn't do that. Yeah. I'd be going crazy.
Yeah.
But I want to come home at the end of the day and, you know.
You can do that in the Texas scene, though, I believe. You know, in Texas and surrounding areas, a lot of guys do that. Yeah. And a lot of guys have families, even businesses, and they're like, all right, we're gone. Maybe at the most it's like a week or 10 days or whatever. But it's a lot of like 3-day runs, 4-day runs. And then maybe they don't even play for a month, and then the next month they play a week.
Yeah, I kind of look at some of the top guys like Casey Donahue. I think he's done a great job at it. He'll kind of play for a month or two, and then they kind of take a little break, and then they play a little more, and then take a break. And, or at least that's what I kind of noticed about it. But even like looking at Parker, you know, when you get big enough, you could be flying in somewhere, and then they're flying out. But then, you know, I take that time. You could go rope during the week, you know, and then you just go fly back out to wherever you're going to go. If, you know, you were to get that big, like, I think that's how I would do it. I'd come home. I'd fly right back home, and I'd be roping all week, or, you know, working on my side business and stuff, and just trying to live life. Because I promise you, just from the little bit that I've done it, you know, and I hardly have any success at all, but just from the little bit, if you're just out there playing in a bar every single night, it gets real hard on you real fast. So if that's your only life, you don't have anything else to look forward to, it's a good reason a lot of the musicians don't make it or get off into bad stuff, you know.
Well, and you're almost like living in this like little artificial world.
It is.
You know, it's you know, everybody likes to go to the bar and have a good weekend out or this, that, and the other, but imagine being that person that like lives in that, where you're up all night long and you wake up at, you know, 2 p.m. and every single day, and drinks are free, and you know,
or you're up all night long, and then you get up at 5 a.m. and drive.
Right? Yeah, there's that too.
that's the part I don't think a lot of people realize. They think we just sleep all day or something, but man.
Well, when you're on the tour, when you got the bus and all that, those guys
are... Yeah, they get to sleep, but we ain't got no bus
but
right
for
now,
y'all, so. No.
No, we're we're up till 3 in the morning at the blue light, cleaning up, and then getting up at 5 a.m. to drive to wherever the next day. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I played a band once where nobody could stay awake, dude. I'd end up driving so much because, like, everybody would pass out.
Yeah.
I hated that.
Well, pretty much all the night drives, I do the majority of it, and Chase helps me also. But, yeah, me and him and Travis drive sometimes, my guitar player, but we're pretty much it. But mainly it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because, honestly, I don't like sitting in the back that much, but
yeah,
kind of get sick back there.
Yeah, and I like something to do, too.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of keeps you busy, like, driving, keep something on your mind, but...
And save on hotel rooms. We drive home a lot just to do that, to save our money, because...
Yeah, put it in your pocket.
Three
instead.
Rooms a night, it gets a little bit pricey.
Heck yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how's the married life?
It's good, man. I keep telling people nothing really changed. We've already been living together for almost 2 years now, and then we already had jobs and everything, so it's kind of like just a vacation for a little while.
There you go. You just got married, huh?
Like, yeah, last month. It was like a month this past week. So.
So is it? Well, like you said, it's really not much different. I guess. Music-wise, like, does she go with you, or how do y'all manage that?
No, so she's a school teacher, actually, so she doesn't get to go with me a whole lot. She does when she can, just like this weekend. She didn't have nothing going on, and she's from Fredericksburg, hill country girl, born and raised.
I grew up in Mason.
Okay.
My girlfriend in high school lived in Fredericksburg, and I lived there for a little bit.
I got you. Yeah, I love it up there, man. It's always funny. We passed through there a lot going to rodeos and stuff whenever I was in high school and college and stuff. And then I married a girl from Fredericksburg. I always thought, like, passing through, like, man, what a cool town. I'd love to kind of hang out around here. And now here I am hanging out there quite a bit.
Well,
so.
you found one of the few pretty women there.
Yeah.
And it's not that there – it's just there's not a lot. Like, it's one of those towns that's a retirement town.
Yeah, it is.
And it's – everyone comes in from Austin on the weekend or San Antonio. Yeah. Or if you're there, it's you're like, older and probably rich. Yeah. And then, there's the high school and the actual locals is kind of small.
Yeah, it's a hectic town, though, now. I mean, just even from the time that, like she was saying, from when she graduated, I mean, on like a Monday night, you can't even go eat anywhere without an hour and a half wait, like anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just, it's crazy. It's like downtown Houston or something, but the amount of people that are there. Like she was saying, people get killed on the sidewalk once a year from getting hit by cars and stuff.
Oh, yeah, jaywalking. Yeah, it's such a like foot heavy.
It's crazy. And all those cars, like, I won't drive in the right lane through Main Street. I'm in the middle lane there. And if some dumb tourist is backing out right there, they're just going to clobber you. So.
Oh, yeah. No, there's stuff. Yeah, she's right about that. I've seen it.
I don't think I could ever live there now. I'd love to live around there, but as far as being, like, close to the town, no, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's so crowded.
Yeah, Main Street is just... Yeah, it's just like chaos.
We got married in Fredericksburg, and just being there for a few days, it actually wasn't too bad that week. I don't know why, but it seemed like it was a little less crowded.
Mm-hmm.
Our wedding party sure made the line at Whataburger long that night, I'll tell you that.
Shoot, yeah. Well, where are you playing tonight?
We're at River Road Ice House here in town, New Braunfels. So, we were in Marble Falls last night.
Anywhere tomorrow?
No.
Back home.
Where
is home?
Cat Spring, Texas. No S on Springs. It's just Spring.
Oh, okay.
But, right over there by Sealy Belleville area. Born and raised right there. It doesn't have nothing but a post office and a beer joint. And that's about it.
Sealy, is that where Bloomer Trailers is at?
No, that's not Salinas. Salado.
Salado. Yeah. Oh, okay.
I almost said Salinas. I was getting it mixed up.
All the stuff with S. Well, Carson, man, it's good to have you.
Yes, sir, man. Thank y'all for having me. I sure appreciate it. I know we've been talking about it for a while, and I hadn't been able to get over here. So.
It's been good timing for me because I've been all over the place.
Yeah.
We haven't done one in like a couple months. But,
yeah, man.
How can people stay in touch with you? Keep up with your stuff. Well,
don't DM me.
Yeah. I think we established that in the first of this podcast that we don't want to talk to anyone.
No, DM me. I'd love to hear from you. But yeah, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, go to my website. It's got everything on there. YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, everywhere.
So, Carson Jeffrey.
Anywhere you want to find me, we'll probably be there. Just, yeah, hit me up.
Good deal. We'll have a good show tonight.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me.
Yes, sir.